Shawshank Redemption is an incredible movie. We're going to take another look at another clip in a bit. I don't know what the story is behind the people who wrote the screenplay or the producers, but they seem to be people who really have an understanding of what change is about or spiritual change, which is, thank you, Tommy, which is redemption. That is the point of what redemption. Redemption is when God comes in and takes something in its current form and changes it for a higher purpose. And that's in essence what we saw there. We saw a person who was in their current situation. They made a break. They went through an intermediary process, you know, was going through that pipe and came out on the other side cleansed. And those are four distinct phases to change that we're going to take a look at tonight. Why don't we pray before we do that? God, as I talk tonight, I ask that it wouldn't be me talking, but people would sense you talking to us through thoughts that we have, or maybe impressions, or maybe a feeling or a sense that we have. I know that you can do things that I can't do, and I ask that all of us here would have some encounter with you tonight. And it's in your name that I pray. Amen. That process that Tim Robbins went through in the Shawshank Redemption is the exact same process that Moses and the people of Israel went through. We saw a clip of that from that old DreamWorks movie, Prince of Egypt. How many of you have seen Prince of Egypt? You know? How many of you have seen Charlton Heston and Ten Commandments? You know? You call yourself an American, you haven't seen Charlton Heston and Ten Commandments, you know? I mean, if you haven't seen those, you actually might have read the story in the Bible, but I doubt that. But, you know, through movies or actually reading it, it's the same exact thing that Moses and the nation of Israel went through in their change process and their redemption process that Tim Robbins went through. And it is the same exact thing that everybody in this place is in tonight. I'm going to talk about four phases, the four steps, the four phases you go through in the midst of change. And I guarantee you, you are in one of these phases. You might be in multiple phases depending on what the area of your life is. But I think you're going to find that there's one phase that you really identify with tonight. So let's talk about this, the four phases of change. The first is this, the blahs. The blahs. You know, the nation of Israel was under the rule of Pharaoh in Egypt for a long, 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 long time. And they were experiencing the blahs. What the blahs are, it's basically your current situation. It's your status quo. And there's nothing really awful that's happened in your life, but there isn't necessarily anything great that happened in your life. Life is just sort of blah, you know? It's sort of blah. It's there. Interesting thing is, we normally don't get the idea in and of ourselves that there could be a better way. This is the fascinating thing about the Israel nation at this point. Is that you would think that if they were in slavery for hundreds of years as they were in slavery, they would have had this plan. They would have had this desire to have freedom. Instead, we don't find that. They're actually very content to stay in their mediocrity, to stay right where they are. God moves through a leader and comes to Moses and says, look, you need to take these people out of slavery. You need to communicate to Pharaoh, the leader of Egypt. You need to take these people out of slavery. And when Moses starts this dialogue with Pharaoh, Pharaoh actually gets very upset. And he says, oh, really? So you want the Israelites to be free? I'll tell you what. Just because you're annoying me right now, I'm going to double their workload. And sometimes when we go from the blahs to the next place, it isn't all that happy. Exodus 5:22 says this. Moses returned to the Lord and said, O Lord, why have you brought trouble upon this people? Is this why you sent me? You know, Moses is basically saying, is God, you know, before you asked me to change, before you asked our people to change, life was easy. It was predictable. It was nice. That's always the way the blahs are. The blahs are always something you can manage. They're something you understand because it's the place that you've been for a long, long time. There's no tragedies. There's no turmoil. There's no ulcers. There's no tension. At the same time, there's no growth. There's no advancement. There's no spiritual intimacy with God. It's just you stay right where you are. How many of you have reused that line we talked about last week with the toddler this last week? Have you used that? You remember that line? If you don't remember, then I get to say it again because it was such a good line for me to talk about. It actually ties into this. The idea, you know, the toddler, you know, the toddler sits in his own crap. You know, that one, oh, yeah, that one, yeah. And, you know, and what he said, hey, it smells, but it's warm and it's mine, so I'll stay here. You know, that's the blahs. You know, it's not incredible, it's not awesome, but there's enough good things there that you just sort of stay there. And so for some of us, we're in the blahs financially. Financially, there's no month at the end of our money, but we can get there via Visa, so we're okay to stay in debt. Actually, I saw statistics last week that if you discount those of us who pay our credit card balance off every month, remove all those who pay their credit card balance off every month, the average credit card debt for people who have credit card debt is $12,000. $12,000 is the average. And what happens is when you're in debt, and I've been there, you know, what happens is you adjust your system, you adjust your life, and it's not great, it's not awesome, but you learn to live with it. You just live in the blahs. Let's say you're dating someone. And you come to that point in your relationship where it seems like, you know, sex is a good idea and it should happen. And maybe you don't know, you know, that God thinks that it's not a good idea until you're married. Or maybe you do know that, but you disagree with that. But for whatever reason, or maybe you do agree with that, but you're in a moment of weakness, whatever the situation. And you go and you have sex with somebody. And this complicates the relationship because it brings a different emotional dynamic to it. It brings all kind of strings to the whole thing. It makes it that much more difficult to eliminate the relationship, and you feel like you now have something vested, so you really ought to work to try to make it out. And basically, even if the relationship isn't going well, you have one more reason to stay in it because of that complicating factor, and you're in the blahs. Even though that relationship might be going nowhere, you can't imagine yourself getting out of it because of all the intricacies associated with it. Your dating life is the blahs. Your finances are the blahs. Your kids might be the blahs. You're not laughing at that. Yeah, a lot of us do have kids or blahs. You know, you look in their face and they're not thriving, but they're not really tanking out in life. They're just sort of existing. I mean, they don't annoy you. They might annoy other people, but they're not annoying you. And so you're not really doing anything to strategically build into your kids. You're just letting them run their natural course of life. Now, eventually, the blahs become the brutals. But the trick is to not go to the brutals, to start the process of change when you're in the blahs. I mean, eventually, you'll do personal bankruptcy and the brutals will force you to change. Eventually, you know, the person you're dating or something, there'll be something like an unwanted pregnancy and somebody won't take credit or somebody, not credit, that's not the right, no, hopefully they'll take credit. Someone won't take responsibility and it'll be obvious that, hey, you know, this can't go. You know, at some point, kid's going to become an adolescent, maybe have substance abuse, is going to say, okay, I need to figure something out here. I mean, there's brutals that come into our life and say, now I must change. But the trick is to notice, when am I in the blahs and when am I not really mandated to change, but when might there be a better place for me? I want us to be able to recognize what that thing is that needs to change for there to be growth. And I don't really want to talk about this unless we all have an application, because there's nothing I hate worse than ending a service and everyone just goes out and says, oh, those are interesting spiritual principles. I want us to end today with you going through an application process while you sit here. And so I want to do something a little unusual. I want to just right now, just take a moment and pray, okay? Just go ahead and bow your head if you want to. God, as we're having our heads bowed right now, you know that we don't do stuff like this just because we have to fill up an hour. You know, we do this because we want all of us to grow. And so before I talk anymore, would you give us a thought right now of what is the thing that should change in our life? What is the blah? Right now, would you put into our minds or help us to recall whatever it is that we ought to be thinking about for the rest of this message? I gave three examples of finances and dating and kids. I mean, there's numerous. There's dozens and dozens and dozens of others. Whatever it is. Would you just give us an impression right now? Okay. I'm going to trust that you have something on your mind. If you don't, you'll hopefully figure something out. But let's think about that thing. Let's think if you say it right now, that is my blah, and there must be some change. There must be some growth. What's the next phase? The next phase, if you choose to go there, is the break. That's the break. This is the moment that you move from where you are to a new place. This is the moment that you actually step forward to take new territory. Here's what the nation of Israel, here's what their break was like. It says this in the book of Exodus. Now the length of time that the Israelite people lived in Egypt was 430 years. And at the end of the 430 years, to the very day, all the Lord's divisions, left Egypt. When they broke was when they actually got out of bondage. Now, there's a whole series of things that are supposed to happen with them. They're supposed to get to their own promised land. They're supposed to have a great relationship with God and freedom, all that kind of stuff. That was going to happen hopefully some other point. But there was a definitive time when they broke, when they moved from a place. And there is a time when you must make a specific action to break from the circumstances you're in order for there to be growth, in order for there to be change. Last week I talked about how life is a series of tests, and until we pass a test, God doesn't take us to a new course to help us grow. And one of the examples I used was, you know, if we know that we need to forgive somebody and get over our bitterness, until we pass that test, we're not going to go anywhere. And somebody came up to me afterwards, had a very insightful comment. The gentleman said that, you know, sometimes you can't just forgive and move on. In his situation, as a child, he was abused physically, sexually, emotionally. And coming to a place where you're going to forgive, or when you're going to release that bitterness, that's not like a, you know, boom thing. And totally right, totally true. He right now is in the midst of the classroom trying to deal with that right now. But what is the break? The break is not when you eliminate your grief. The break is not when you eliminate your forgiveness. The break is when you say, today I'm going to go to counseling. Or when you say, today, I'm going to tell somebody else about my past because things that are hidden have a power over me. And I'm going to tell a friend or somebody. The break could be anything. It's when you definitively do something to go to a new place. That is the key critical area. See, we have a vested interest in here right now to not change. Let me tell you this. We have a vested interest in not change. In fact, there's a lot of things in the physical world that mirror the spiritual world. That's why we're calling this the DNA of change. Here we have up at your side of the stage, we have two double helix, which represent DNA, inside sort of a veil. This is somewhat similar to what's happening in the midst of our bodies. Every cell that's ever been created has come into being in your body from when you were an embryo. Every cell contains the blueprints for the entire for your entire body. But every cell has a unique function and a unique DNA that it is supposed to accomplish in the midst of the body. And as we've been talking recently, every healthy thing grows. If it's an organization, if it's a church, if it's a person, it's a marriage, every healthy thing grows. And so the cells, when they are healthy, they will reproduce. They will multiply. And what happens is, they will take on the same DNA that had in its previous form to the next cell. And these things will keep reproducing and the DNA will go. And there's systems that are built into our DNA, into our cell structure, that ensure that the integrity of the DNA is upheld. Now, when I say the integrity of the DNA, I don't mean the purity of the DNA. I just mean the way the DNA originally was. Okay, so if the DNA originally had mapped out that we were going to have cancer when we were 42... okay, whatever it is in the DNA, and I don't understand how all that works, nobody really does, but whatever that is, the form, the function of that DNA, if it doesn't get reproduced the exact same way, then the body has an internal mechanism that kills itself. It reads the code, and it eliminates the cell. And this is very interesting, because in the physical, what I'm saying here is in the physical world, and by the way, I don't know this stuff. I had to ask somebody about this stuff. So don't say, boy, is he smart? No, I'm not. It's about everything I know about a cell and DNA right there. And I probably said it wrong. So those of you who know better, talk to me afterwards. But what this means is the body has this desire to protect itself. And the thing is, change never happens. Eliminate change. Eliminate a disruption in the pattern. Kill off that which is different. That's the way our bodies are meant and the way they design. And the way this works for us in the spiritual world is we are inclined not to change. We will kill off any idea that threatens us. We will kill off any idea that is newer than the one we've been through the last 21 years or the last 81 years. We have a vested interest to believe, no, my integrity, my wholeness right now, I am right and I don't need to change. And that's part of the DNA of change, is making a break is very, very rare. It's very difficult, but it has to happen. We must defend the death, our picture of who we are. Instead, we've got to defend the death, our desire to grow. And some of us go, man, I like change. What do you mean? I love change. Some might look at your life and think, well, maybe you do like change. You change jobs a lot. You change your vacations. You change, you know, who you're dating. And that might be part of your DNA is fickleness. That's not change. That's fickleness. That's lack of follow through. When I'm talking about change, I'm talking about my internal structure, how I view the world, how I operate things. And to notice those things and to make a break is difficult. I've been noticing one for me just in the last 2 weeks. So I realized that the last two times I've taken three or four days off, did so over at least that much over Christmas, took a few days off over Easter. Both times I got a little sick. Now I pride myself in never getting sick. I don't. I never get sick. I can't remember ever since I've been here at Crossroads 7 years not coming to work because I was sick. So I kind of pride myself in that. Yet, the last two times I was off, I wasn't in bed throwing up sick. I just was like, get those oogies, you know, you just kind of feel the pricklies on, you're just not on your game. First time I thought it was just a coincidence, and second time, maybe it still is a coincidence, but I'm just asking myself, I don't know, maybe I got some adrenaline thing inside of me that I need to be around here and doing something, and I get a charge out of the adrenaline. Maybe adrenaline carries me, and then when I get off, my adrenaline goes down, and maybe I have some adrenaline addiction or something, and then I get sick. I don't know. I got to figure this out. I really don't. But here's what I'm saying. I'm realizing right now, you know, something might need to change in me. And so I'm making a break. And one of the things that's the definitive break for me is I have an exhaustive physical setup in February. To say, all right, exactly, you know, what's going on there? You know, at some point, if this really is a physical problem with me, at some point, I'll know something's wrong. An ulcer will come, or I'll just crash, or whatever. But the trick is, if we can identify in the blah stage what needs to change to make a break from it, it's incredible. Saul Alinsky says this: change means movement, and movement means friction. When we're in the midst of change, we are moving, and there is friction, and it is always difficult. It is always hard. You know, I think a lot of times why we are tempted or come to a place of even attempting suicide is either because the blahs have become the brutals and we can't take it anymore, or we try to make a change, but we become so frustrated because there's no easy ways to change our environment and change everything that we just get so frustrated. And nobody just goes out and just solves their problems. Nobody goes out and just changes something. There's got to be a break. I mean, the definitive break might be financially. The definitive break might be that you cut your credit cards, or you make a plastic souffle and you stick them in the oven or something like that. It's a break. Or definitive break might be that you tell your girlfriend, your boyfriend, your whatever, guess what? I'm out of here. It's over. You know, whatever those things, there's a definitive break. But the problems don't go away with that. I mean, the credit card bills still come. You still got to figure out how to deal with that. You break up with an unhealthy influence. You know what happens next? They storm the castle gate. That's exactly what happens. You break up with them, then you're getting phone calls because then they want you all that much more because you showed courage. So now they're getting the phone calls and the sob stories. You know, it doesn't go away. It gets harder. And this is the next step in phase. It's the blues. When we realize we need to change and we do something definitive to get out of the situation, there's the blues. The problems don't go away. In fact, sometimes they get worse. The nation of Israel, you know, their break was an incredible, miraculous thing. They break out of slavery. They cross the Red Sea. Red Sea parts. They go through it. Just they get through it, Pharaoh's armies are chasing after. The Red Sea collapses, drowns them all. I mean, you'd think this would be incredible euphoria. They felt on top of the world. But then reality hits. Let's take a look at it in the book of Exodus. In the desert, the whole community grumbled against Moses. Well, if only we had died by the Lord's hand in Egypt. There we sat around pots of meat and ate all the food we wanted. But you brought us out into this desert to starve this entire assembly to death. It's like they get on the other side of the sea and they're like, man, I'm hungry. I'm hungry here, you know. Where's the Taco Bell? Where's the Taco Bell? No Taco Bell. Well, Chipotle's. How am I going to eat? Wait a minute. Everything isn't just given to me? It's not like God's just going to give us this grand buffet of everything? And this is what happens when you're in the blue stage. You fantasize about the past. Well, we were in Egypt. We had incredible meals. We had incredible this, incredible that. This is what always happens. You always have the temptation to go back to the way you were and not complete the change process. It's like, hello, you were slaves, okay? There's always something good about where you were. There's always something good about who you were dating, or something good about the possession you bought on credit. There's always something good about anything that you need to change with. But we fantasize about it because we can't take the blues. We just think our situation could change immediately, and we can't take the difficulty. Sometimes it gets worse. Sometimes our immediate feelings, our immediate circumstances feel worse. And this is the way it always works. Always. It's the way it works physically. If you want to change yourself physically, who's been doing the gym since the first of the year, right? You know, you feel worse. You feel sore, or if you don't go, you feel guilty that day you didn't go, or, you know, when you do go and work out, you didn't do something else you want to do. I mean, there's blues with it. It works every area of life. America. You know, America was in the blahs. We had nice colonies over here. And then what did happen? They made a break. How'd they make the break? They signed the Declaration of Independence. That was the break. Okay, and they got the blues months and months later, because it took a while for that document to get all the way over to England. And then for all the warships from England to come all the way back over to the United States. And then there was the blues. There's always the blues. And it's the reason why we tend to shortchange the change process. See, the goal really isn't change. The goal really is God. That's really the goal. It just so happens that when we're in the change process, we realize that we need God more than otherwise, because the change process forces us to lean into Him, because we didn't really need Him in the blahs, because we understood all the world of our blahs. But when you get into a different world and you start to change, you need God. We need to lean into Him. A friend of mine this last year showed up at my doorstep, and he was hurting dude. He had multiple affairs, which I had known about, and he now came to the place where his wife found out about them. He was a hurting dude, nowhere near as hurting as she was. Nowhere near as hurting as she was, obviously. And he said to me, the thing that she wants to hear me say is, she wants to hear me say, I'll never do it again. And I don't know that I can tell her that. I don't know I can tell her I can never do it again. And I said, dude, you can do this. You can do this. You go to her and you tell her you're not going to do this again. He said, but what if I don't? What if I, you know, I've thought that or said that before. What if this time, what if it's the same result? I don't feel like I can. I said, you can do this. And the reason I said you can do this, and the reason why he has been doing it, is the key to get through the blues. It is this. It is to set up automated systems that help us through the blues. I was able to say to him, there's a lot of things in your life right now that you didn't have those previous years. You've got an automated system that you're going and you're worshiping at a church together regularly. It's helping you. You're getting together regularly with other people and bearing your soul, and you're talking about your garbage. You're talking about your crap. You're not keeping it all secret like you used to. You've got these automated systems that are now in your life that can help you through the blues. And that's what we have to do when we're in the blues. If we just rely on who we are and our own intentions, we'll never change. Well, we have to set up something in our life that's automatic. I've been thinking about this in reading through the book, The Automatic Millionaire. Saw a little article on this. Interesting. I want to go buy that book and read it. So I went and been about halfway through. It's very fascinating. Here's what David Bach says. He says, you don't have time to sit down every few weeks and figure out how to save and whom to send checks to. Haven't you already tried to budget and save? It's not working, is it? Yet this is what most Americans are trying to do, and it's a recipe for frustration and a recipe for failure. And his whole thesis is, to get ahead financially, you have to set up automated systems to where your employer just automatically sends off, you know, portion of your thing into savings or something like that. And then you go off and then you live life. And I've identified with this one financially. I mean, I was a wreck financially for years and years and years. And I started taking a look at what the Bible says about money. And I was like, man, I want to do that. And I started doing that. But it was always hard until I was all, and how would I always know it was hard? I always knew it was hard because then those car insurance bills would come like 6 months later. You're not expected. It's like, oh, you know, what am I going to do? You know, like, $325 hit, and you got nothing. You're not in debt, but you got nothing there. And you're like, ugh. Until I set up automated savings. Man, just send money. I don't even know it there. And it takes away the stress. And then I start setting up automatic giving. Taking my Quicken, automatic thing. Poof, you know, gone, out. Don't even see it. We did a big gut check about, you know, almost 4 years ago now. We did a building campaign for this place where hundreds and hundreds of us went above and beyond what we normally give to make this place happen. And about 83 to 85% of actually what was committed was given. And I was bummed about that because I know for me, having completed it, there was an incredible benefit. By the way, that's the next step. Incredible benefit to it. And I think one of the reasons why some people had all the intentions in the world is they did not have an automated system to set that up. Whatever it is, have an automated system. By the way, I'd be remiss if I didn't put one little advertisement. If you want to know more about like how some people do that, there's an e-gift brochure out at the information table you can grab if you want. But whatever it is in our life, we've got to say, what is the automated thing? Church. Our church attendance is always up in January and February. I don't know why. I think it's why. It's because people say, man, I need to have a spiritual goal this year of going to church every weekend. And that's what church is. It's an automated system where you can think about things that you wouldn't normally think about. You can be challenged on things you're not going to be challenged by when you watch Seinfeld or Friends or whatever. And it just should be automatic. You just say, unless there's some emergency, Saturday night at 5:30 or Sunday at 9 or whatever it is, that is my system. That's what I'm going to do. And the fourth step, once we do these things, comes down to the benefits. The benefits. Joshua 21, 43 to 45, and this happens a long, long, long time after the original people broke. They didn't receive the benefits because they actually did a bunch of things that nullified their previous efforts. I don't want to get into that right now. But here's what happens in the book of Joshua. So the Lord gave Israel all the land he had sworn to give their forefathers, and they took possession of it and settled there. And the Lord gave them rest on every side. Not one of all the Lord's good promises to the house of Israel failed. Every single one was fulfilled. There's two ways that great things happen in your life. There's two ways that you feel good. Everyone I know wants to feel good. I want to feel good. Everyone I want to know wants great things to happen in life. Let me tell you, there's two ways it happens. There's two venues for great things to happen in your life. The first venue is called grace. It's that element of God that causes him to give to us when we don't deserve it. It causes him to just give stuff to us. It's the reason why people who deserve nothing and live slimy lives, don't you know them? Like probably the person next to you, the person you're looking at, you know. People who seemingly deserve nothing, they have all these great things. You're like, how does that happen? You know, grace is, it's not understandable. It's just who God is. He just gives things. That's one way great things happen is, and how we feel good is grace. The second one is called justice. The second way is called justice. One of my favorite stories is the older woman who goes to Olin Mills. They have Olin Mills in Cincinnati? Yeah, okay. I had them in Pittsburgh. I haven't seen them around here for a while. Goes to Olin Mills. She says, you know, now do me justice. Do me justice, says the photographer. Do me justice. And Joshua says, the photographer says, madam, with a face like yours, you need mercy, not justice. You know, is what you need. You know, that mercy is like grace. But then what justice is the principle of you reap what you sow. You get what you give. That's what justice is. And that's what we're talking about in the change process. You can have great things happen in your life if you never change. It's just because God's a giving God. And this world is wired to have some level of good, even in the midst of all the pain. But change happens. The reason we're motivated to change is because we want a level of goodness. We want a level of benefits. Benefits that come to us. And these are the ones we can control. You can't control God's grace, but you can't control reaping what you sow. You can't control benefits that come as a result of going through the process, of going from the blahs to the break, enduring through the blues, and then getting to the benefits. Your marriage does not need to stay the way it is. It doesn't. It does not. It can go to a new place, and you can get the incredible benefits from it. You do not need to be living paycheck to paycheck. You're not, but you got to reap what you sow, and you've got to start changing your holistic view to money in order to have that thing pop and have the disciplines to change. Your body does not have to stay the way it is. Unfortunately, normally God doesn't come to those of us who've got bad bodies and just say, okay, just by grace, I'm going to take away your fat and now gone. Some of us, as a result of our grace, as a result of the grace that God gave us, you can eat 4 bags of cheese curls and it doesn't affect you at all. Me, I'm now at the age where 4 bags of cheese curls, used to do it, can't do it anymore, you know? So, but God, that doesn't just go away. Physically, You get the benefits if you go through the process of anything you could think of. I bet you right now, the thing you could think about in your life that's really, really difficult, except if it's some sort of disease that you can't control or something like that, I will bet you if you trace it back, it was something back in the blahs you didn't recognize and you didn't take a definitive action to break through it, and you didn't endure through the blues and have systems set up to support you in the midst of that, and you stopped and you didn't receive the benefits of change. You didn't receive the blessings of change. And you know the other really weird thing is? Blessings are not nirvanas. It's not like when you change, you get to this new place, and all of a sudden everything is perfect. Because you know what God does? He brings a new test to you. He brings a new thing to you. It's not like, I have this whole thing called life figured out. Man, I'm 38. And man, I got it figured out. Phew, no. There's this brand new test that comes, and this whole process starts all over again. Why? Because God's ultimate goal for you is exactly the same as it was for the Israelites, for the Jewish nation. God's ultimate goal for them was not to have a great land called the Promised Land and have perfect, comfy, cushy life. That wasn't. His ultimate goal for them was a relationship with Him. That was His ultimate goal. And He used the tests and He used the process of change to bring them into a relationship with Him. See, if we don't have to change, guess what? We don't need God. If we don't have to change, we have life completely figured out. My marriage is popping, my finances are popping, my emotional life is popping, my work life is popping. But if we don't have to change, it means that everything is perfect and comfy in our life, and therefore we don't need God. We don't need Him. And this whole process is there because the ultimate goal God is about bringing us closer and closer to His heart. In the process, our heart gets changed to where we come into relationship with Him. And if you can start to look at all of your problems this way, if you and I can start to look at all of our difficulties, all of the things as a brand new process to get closer to the heart of God, as a brand new course that God is using to grow us as individuals, and not the elimination of our all-American dream. If we can do that, this life all of a sudden starts to make a lot of sense. It starts to have purpose. And we start to feel the benefits and the blessings like never before. I want to ask the band to come out, because I want them to redo a song sort of as a contemplative piece for us. And I want us to think about this idea of change while they do the song. Before they do that, let me also say this. And I don't want to bum you out, but let me say this. You know, there's some things in your life you're never going to change. I know that's incredibly defeatist, and I hate to say it, but there is. Okay? There are some things that are hardwired into your DNA that you're probably going to struggle with for the rest of your life. You really are. I think that I am going to struggle for the rest of my life with selfishness. For the rest of my life, I had a big blowout conversation with Libby today. Okay? And I realized at the end of that conversation, it traces back to me trying to get my way. I think that I am always going to want to get my way. I think I'm getting better in it, but I think that that's something that I'm going to struggle with. And for some of us, maybe we have a physical condition that for whatever reason, God is not going to remove the symptoms of the physical condition while we're here. But the ultimate goal is not change of all of our symptoms. That's why the ultimate goal is close to the heart of God. And this process does that. Let's sit and just reflect on this while the band does this song. God, I know there's a lot of different responses to that song. Some of us sang that song and we feel 100% everything that we just sang. That song articulates our heart. Others of us sang that song, or we read the words and we said, you know, I want to think like that. That's really the way I would love to be able to think like that. And others of us sat here looking at that thing and going, whatever. I know that all of us in this place are at different places. And my prayer is that you would do what you do to facilitate the change process to bring us to be the people that we're designed to be. And I pray these things in your Son Jesus' name. Amen.